Welcome to Ray and Tay today. It's Friday.
Music today. Well, hello there. Welcome to Ray and Tay today. We got a fabulous Friday show for you lined up. My name is Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I am Tay, Eric Taylor. And man, nice show, but a busy show. There's a lot going on in sports. And that makes Ray and Tay happy, you know, because we love some sports. So, you know, join us like you always do. We love your emails, and, you know, we read them and, you know, respond back, and sometimes we mention them on the air. But it's RAEANDTAY today at gmail.com. Please always follow us on Facebook at Ray and Tay Today, and also at Twitter. Follow us and tweet at us at Ray and Tay Today, and we appreciate it all. And, hey, man, we're ready to give you some flavor, some sports and information. You know, and break it on down. Ray, why don't you tell them what we're going to talk about on this beautiful Friday evening?
Well, we got a lot going on, so we're going to go through breaking news. We got some stuff happening in the NBA and the NFL. They announced the Hall of Fame, baseball as well. We're going to take you quickly around the NBA with some hot topics, some teams moving up, some teams moving down, some injuries, some people coming back from injury. We're going to start to put a little more emphasis on college basketball. It's about that time.
The hoops.
Looking at my Gucci, it's not quite March, so we're not at March Madness yet, but we're building up to it, and we'll have a special guest on Monday, Seth Davis, by way of CBS and Sports Illustrated, the college basketball guru. So we'll talk a little college basketball today, get warmed up for Monday's show.
Three great games this weekend, man. So we'll talk about
those. Yeah, absolutely. We got some top 20 matchups, and then the last segment of the show, playoff preview. So we've got
four great divisional rounds,
two on Saturday, two on Sunday. Ray and Tay will break it down for you. Tell you
the cream of the crop.
This
is the best weekend, right? We got the star quarterbacks. This is what it's all about, baby.
It is. It is. I love this weekend because, you know, next weekend's great. It's the championship and who goes to the Super Bowl. But, you know, I want more football. So to get four games, you know, that's better than two games. So I love this weekend, this divisional weekend. So let's kick it off with some breaking news. Let's start with the NBA.
Well, so yeah, I think the NBA is looks like it's going to be official. The Maloofs will be out, completely out. There was rumors they might be around, but they are selling to the Seattle Group. The Sacramento Kings, are you ready for this? $525 million Dollarooskies. Wow. That's a lot of money.
Oklahoma City benefited from a franchise, but it begs the question, because they're going to rebuild, they're going to build them an arena. They just did it 6 or 7 years later. So it begs the question, did they really have to lose the Sonics? Right? Why did Seattle lose a team in the first place?
I think at the time they did not want to build a new arena, and the Sonics could not compete anymore. You know, and that was the biggest problem. They just could not compete.
Right. But it eventually happened. So Howard Schultz sold the Sonics to Bennett, and Bennett moved them to become the Oklahoma City Thunder. So it's as if you knew the Seattle area was going to get another franchise. It just took
a lot of pressure.
Well,
it's a great sports town. They deserve it.
They definitely do. They're a great sports town. They had that 78-79. They had those two seasons where they went back-to-back with the Bullets. They went 1-1, so Washington 1-1, Seattle 1-1. It's a great, great
downtown Freddie Brown,
city.
Gus Williams.
Oh, downtown Freddie Brown.
You don't know
right
Gus
up
Williams.
Jack Sigma and the boys.
What you know about Gus Williams?
That's nice. But, so yeah,
this, you know,
in basketball, we got some more stuff going on, right? Marcus Camby got hurt.
Yep. Hurt his foot last night during the game.
So he looks like he's going to be out for a little bit. We got a couple guys coming back, right? John Wall, the Washington Bullets officially said that John Wall's coming back against Atlanta on Saturday. So good for all those Washington Wizards fans and all those Kentucky fans. Your man John Wall is back. Derrick Rose is fighting his way back, and it looks like he's closer and closer every day to coming back.
Yeah,
so that's,
dunking
that's
in practice.
Good news.
Yeah, no, it's good. And then also, of course, we got our man Phil Jackson giving advice. Still, I love it. Kind of a little big about the defense for D'Antoni, but Phil believes if they play good D that this team could still, the L.A. Lakers, which we'll talk about, still make the playoffs. I just think it's kind of funny, you know, that Phil likes to chime in. But also, your boy, Greg Oden, God bless him and those knees, right? And just all the stuff he's been through. There's been some talk that maybe he might sign with the Miami Heat, but it would be more to get better rehab with the team, because it doesn't look like he still would be ready to make it on the court this season. And then we got some NFL news. Wow. We'll get into the Hall of Fame in a minute, but we've got some coaches. Malarkey, you know, that was just yesterday, so we were on Wednesday. Malarkey got fired from the Jaguars. But the Cleveland Browns, congratulations, hired the offensive coordinator from the Panthers, Rod Chudzinski, who was with the Browns in 04 and 07, 08, had a great offensive coordinator for them. He was assistant head coach of San Diego for a minute. I like what he did with Cam Newton, changing the system around the player. It shows that he's just a great offensive coach. And as we talked about off air, that Cleveland team went 10-6 when he was the OC with Edwards and Dave Anderson.
And Edwards. He got the best out of that team, and then they did nothing after that. So good for him. They say he might bring Norv Turner. Ironically enough, he was the Antonio Gates' position coach, the tight end coach, and the assistant head coach, like you said, in San Diego, and he's trying to get Norv Turner back. And you say, well, why would Norv go work for him? But ESPN was reporting that he's going to bring Norv Turner's son up from Carolina with him. So Norv Turner might want to go coach with his son.
Yeah, why not? And then how about them Cowboys with
I don't know
if it's the right move. Cowboys hire Monty Kippen. He comes back to the NFL at 72 with the Tampa 2. I think, Ray, this is where we see GM Jerry Jones might have misstepped. I don't think he should have got rid of Rob Ryan. You're trying to, feed the wolves and the Coliseum and make people happy with some blood. Well, maybe the blood should have been Garrett and not Rob Ryan, because it's not a knock on Monty Kippen. I just think that right now that system, if he's going to stick with the Tampa 2, and why would he change, right? That doesn't go with your talent on your team.
Well, you might have a point there, especially with the fact that your best defensive player is still DeMarcus Ware, and he is getting banged up as it is now, playing a 3-4 linebacker. And then if they change it to a 4-3, then he's essentially a defensive end, and he's going to be, they're saying, closer to the line of scrimmage, taking on
That's
those big
good.
Offensive tackles, getting hurt potentially. So he's the one that loses out most in that switch, from a 3-4 to a 4-3. So hopefully they can find a meeting of the minds and they can get the best out of DeMarcus Ware and keep him healthy. But, yeah, that's an interesting one. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Also, the three guys from Alabama, so Lacy, the running back, Milner, the cornerback, and Fluker, the offensive lineman, are all coming out. So they won their two, back-to-back national championships. So they said, all right, all those juniors
I'd
are
like
coming
Eddie
out.
Lacy on my team if I'm an NFL GM. I'll take Lacy in a minute.
Milner, too. Fluker, too. Yeah. I'll take any of those guys.
Oh, yeah. And now your boy Brian Kelly, a little flirting going on, right? Maybe it's to boost his contract, or maybe, he really wants to go to the Eagles. He met with the Eagles. Obviously, our boy, Lovie Smith, interviewed with the Eagles, and he's meeting with the Chargers. Bruce Arians is going to meet with the Chargers, and Ken Whitenhunt from out here in Arizona. So it's kind of interesting. The coaching carousel continues, a lot of interviews, and as these coaches land, we will, spread the news to you. Andy Reid got Doug Peterson, the old backup quarterback, as his offensive coordinator. I'm like, huh? What? But
I think he coached him up, in Seattle. So look, there's five open head coaching positions still. So next week will be pretty critical, especially as these teams that are in the playoffs, some of them lose. Yeah, their coordinators will start taking some of these jobs. But yeah, let's get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, real quick though, man, just you know. Well, by the way, David Akers will be kicking for the Niners in the game. But just on a sad note, I just wanted to mention, you know, that Junior Seau, it was found that he suffered from CTE and you know just the chronic hits and all that stuff. And the family, you know, had the whole brain investigated, the doctor's research and studied. And you know what's so fascinating about the whole thing? You cannot find CTE in a person that's alive. So you cannot, you know, they cannot diagnose someone living with CTE, only, you know, a dead brain.
Oh, I didn't even
dead
know
person.
That.
And a cranium, yeah, yeah. So, it's just sad. It's just sad. But let's go to a good note, right? They got down to the 15 finalists for the National Football Hall of Fame. Ray,
Hall of Fame
why don't
Friday.
You read off the... Why don't you just read the list, and then we'll go through what we think?
Well, so the way it works, to remind everybody, is that they have a list of 15 finalists, and then they announce it the Saturday before the Super Bowl. You have a minimum of 4 and a maximum of 7 going into the Hall of Fame, which I don't know if I agree with. I actually like baseball, even though baseball's got a lot of things wrong with it. To me, I like this notion of 75% of the writers vote for you, you're in. So, in other words, you need to be exceptional, and the writers need to vote you in, not, you know, minimum 4, maximum 7.
Yeah.
You're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer, you get in.
No, definitely. And also, remember, it's really, I think
nobody's a Hall of Famer that year.
But they
okay.
also have to have one old player in the NFL. So we have to mention that, too, or like
right.
a media type or something. So go ahead, read the list.
So the new guys... The new guys are basically 4 linemen, right? 2 offensive linemen, 2 defensive linemen. So it's Jonathan Ogden of the Ravens, Larry Allen of the Niners and Cowboys fame, and then on the defensive side, it's Michael Strahan and Warren Sapp, Bucks and Raiders for the most part. So 4 really good offensive and defensive linemen, a defensive tackle, Warren Sapp that got pressure on the quarterback, Michael Strahan, of course, a defensive end, and then 2, you know, fantastic linemen. And they join the other finalists that are left over from years past. That includes Jerome Bettis, Chris Carter, Tim Brown, and Andre Reed, the 3 receivers, Charles Haley and Kevin Green, the pass rushers, the linebackers slash defensive ends. And then you had Will Shields, Aeneas Williams, Bill Parcells, and Eddie DeBartolo Jr. Oh, and Art Modell. So
right. You also have Dave Robinson and Curly Culp. So I think those are from some of the old players.
Those are the senior nominees, yeah.
Right.
Dave Robinson and Culp are the senior nominees. So a lot of talent out there. I tell you what, you could make an argument that everybody you read out there, I mean, I don't know that much about Robinson and Culp, but, you know, of the new guys, of the new age guys, you could argue
right.
that every one of them could be a Hall of Famer. So
well, right off the bat, I kind of like, I mean, I like Sapp. I like Strahan. I'm partial to the bus, being a Steeler fan. I think Jerome Bettis should be in. Tim Brown, I never thought he was the best receiver in football. And maybe, you know, there was a lot of guys that were around at the time. Jonathan Ogden, he's got to get in. I think Bill Parcells.
Larry Allen is just as good as Jonathan Ogden, if not better.
No, I was going to say Larry Allen. He's a beast. But I think Ogden, man, he solidified the whole Ravens offense and team, you know, that made them tough. You know, Jamal Lewis breaking 2,000 yards. I think Eddie DeBartolo and Art Modell and Parcells have done so much for the game. I could see all of them getting in. And you know what? Chris Carter. Isn't it time, ladies and gentlemen, the CC gets in the Hall of Fame? I think he deserves it, Ray. I think he's got to get in this year.
he does more than catch touchdowns. I mean, if we went through his stats, but he caught 130 touchdowns. So right there, and even if that's all, even if he had 130 receptions for 130 touchdowns, that would be pretty impressive. But the guy has 1,100 receptions for 14,000.
He was on our list when we did the top five wide receivers, remember?
Yeah. I mean, this guy, for some reason, and you know what? He did have trouble in the beginning of his career, and he did have issues and substance abuse and all that stuff, but he's cleaned it up, and towards the middle of his career in Philly, and then definitely when he went to Minnesota, he did big things. And this guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame. So let's get the ball moving. Let's make him one of the seven and put Chris Carter in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. It's going to all be that night when they have the NFL honors on that Saturday, and they'll also announce the NFL Hall of Fame people. And like on that Friday, February 1st, our show before the Super Bowl, we'll have the Ray and Tay Awards where we announce the winners so you guys can vote on our Facebook page. You can send us the emails at Gmail, rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. You can vote for MVP, comeback player, defensive player, rookie of the year, and coach of the year.
Yeah. Oh, one more piece of breaking news that we should talk about or just at least mention is that Major League Baseball finally in 2013 agreed to in-season drug testing for HGH where they can draw your blood and test in-season for HGH.
Randomly.
So that's a great step forward.
Oh, it's huge.
Eliminating HGH. Look, it's a cat and mouse game, right? Every time that the chemists come up with something to mask the drugs and hide and cheat the test, then you got to catch up and have more rigorous testing. And so that'll go on between scientists all the time. But at least there's not a gaping hole in the drug program, which is in-season HGH testing, which just didn't exist. So now it does, which is good. I mean, baseball got a big slap in the face with this Hall of Fame class of 2013. So good for baseball.
And they have the strongest. They have the strongest drug testing in all of sports. So I mean, in all of the major sports. So I like that, and I think you're right. It's great, and it's about time. So you ready? Let's talk some NBA, man.
Okay.
Last night, I'm not mad at the Knicks. They didn't have Melo. They lost to the Pacers. Paul George was playing some ball, Ray. He's like, forget Danny Granger. Forget Oreos. These are Cool J cookies. I'm bad. Yo, he's nice.
He's a bad boy. He's one of those matchup nightmares. He's too big for your average guard. He's too quick and long and athletic for your small forwards out there unless you have a mega athlete. This kid George is a tough matchup. He can rebound, he can score, he can shoot, he's lanky, he's just that kind of just enough of that okie doke, you know, where he gets his shot off. He's a nice player. And then
J.R. Smith in postgame was like, look, that boy is 6'8 and a stat stuffer and he's hard to handle. You know,
he is,
and
that's
true.
Coming from J.R. Smith who's similarly athletic and, you know, is hard to handle too.
Yeah. Well, you know, give the Pacers credit, right? They're doing this without Granger. They're, in first place just by a game and a half. They're 22-14. The Bulls, who play our Knicks tonight, are 19-14. This, the Eastern Conference, the Central Division is pretty tough. You know, in the top eight playoff spots, the Pacers, Bulls, and Bucks, they're all sort of right there. I'd like to see the Knicks tonight, even though they're banged up. No Camby. Tyson Chandler's a little hurt. The shoulder he hurt last night a little bit. Obviously, Melo's coming back. Amari on a back-to-back. Probably won't play killer minutes. No Wallace. I'd like to see the Knicks win a tough game at home against Chicago tonight. What are you thinking about this?
Well, there's still some bad blood with that first meeting when Noah and Chandler and everybody's pushing each other and a little got a little heat under the collar. I tell you what, Thibodeau and that defense gives the Knicks trouble. You know, they got size, they can rebound. They do everything that the Knicks don't do, and in fact, that is
a
bad matchup for the Knicks. So hopefully the Knicks could pull this out. I'm thinking in the playoffs, though, Knicks want to avoid Chicago, especially if DeRozan comes back. But the Knicks had trouble scoring last night, and they had trouble putting the ball in the hole without Carmelo. So hopefully Carmelo comes back. They get a little better spacing. Like you said, not too much out of Amari on the back-to-back. The big men are banged up a little bit. I don't know.
You need a big game from J.R. Smith. You really do.
Yeah, and frankly, he's been playing great. He's been playing great and consistent, and he's been doing his thing. So J.R. Smith is okay. I'll put him down for 17-20. The question is there a third scorer on the Knicks, whether it's Novak, a.k.a. Novocaine, or some other scorer? What's that?
Chris Copeland's been doing a little something.
Copeland's
but I'm gonna
okay
throw
too.
This out there, right? There have been reports, and, you know, I've thrown it out there and reported it as well, that the Knicks are possibly thinking about signing Kenyon Martin to a 10-day contract and possibly, you know, putting him on a roster. They already have 15 guys, so they'd have to cut someone. So it's either James White or Kurt Thomas. I say you keep Kurt and cut James White because he never plays, and Kurt plays quality minutes. But this is the big thing. When you play the Pacers, the Celtics, the Bulls, and let's say some of the Western teams like Memphis, the Knicks are skinny, and they don't have any real size in terms of bangers. Amari's not 100%, and Chandler and Camby are sort of light in the butt. So to me, Kenyon Martin would be perfect complementing this team, and I think for us to win the chip, Kenyon Martin could put us over the top. I think it would
be
perfect.
They need some thuggery. They need some thuggalicious.
Yo, he's got it. Remember last year at the Clippers? He was holding it down for a bit.
It begs the question, why is he not on somebody's roster?
Because he didn't want to sign for just the minimum, but he also wanted to only play for a true blue contender. And guess what? That's what we are, and he wants to play in New York. And he's friends with Smith and Melo. So let's talk about the Heat a minute. 23-11, obviously kind of a rough loss last night to the Trailblazers. But we always say this, right? The Heat, not that they're cruising, but they're not going to get upset about whether they wind up losing, you know, win a 60-game season or, you know, 58 games or 63, whatever it is, right? Whatever they wind up in, they'll probably wind up with the number one seed. But I still think, Ray, there's got to be some concerns, because if you can get physical with them, I just don't think going with Bosch at the five and LeBron at the four is going to get you over the hump. Now, give Spoelstra credit, right? He's been playing Joel Anthony more. They re-signed Vernado. So they're trying to inject that physicality also with Haslam. But I just – there's something a little off with Miami this year. And maybe it's, you know, not the Wade and the Bosch that – maybe they're not as hungry as LeBron, because LeBron is playing like out of this world again, right?
LeBron is playing out of his mind, and he's averaging 8.5 rebounds a game to lead the team, which is both good and bad, because it takes a lot of effort. And – it takes a lot from your leading scorer to also be your leading rebounder, who's also your best defensive player.
Yeah.
So the problem is...
and maybe your number one assist guy.
yep. And Chris Bosh is next with 7.5 rebounds. So the problem is going to be that this won't... there's only two or three teams that can expose this weakness, though. And that's the thing. You can't really prepare for this. This isn't a defensive scheme rotation issue that Spoelstra can prepare for. It's basically a weakness that everybody knows about that only a handful of teams can take advantage of. So the good thing for them is that in the East, now it's funny because I had picked Boston to win the East and go play Oklahoma City, because I thought that was the one team, especially if they could get something out of Jeff Green and Solinger
and
Garnett, and those guys, to give them some scoring up front to take advantage of that black hole that Miami Heat have at the four and the five, other than Chris Bosh. But, you know, the Celtics
aren't really playing
that well. Yeah, exactly. Now, the Bulls have the size, so they can definitely hurt them on the boards. The thing is, the Bulls don't really score, other than Boozer. You know, no one.
Well,
doesn't
no,
really
that's
score,
kind of changed this year, right?
Really score a
that's
little bit.
Changed. But Noah's been doing his thing. Noah's been scoring this year. He's definitely getting a lot more double doubles, and he's looking for a shot. And Deng, I think, is improving. And honestly, without Rose, they did that last year, but it's a different core, different bench, right? They lost all their bench guys. I think this team is learning how to win again without Rose. And when Rose comes back, wow. Nobody wants to see the Bulls. The Bulls are going to be really dangerous. I could see, you know, just throw it in the air. Could you see Bulls and Clippers in the NBA championship?
Sure, why not? Look, if they started the season with Rose, I would say that's not outrageous at all.
Right.
But Rose coming back in February and getting everybody together and getting everybody in sync. The one thing the Bulls do, though, is they play D, and D travels. And defense is great in the playoffs. So they, if they can get some half-court scoring, and that's kind of been an issue, especially if you take the ball out of Derrick Rose's hands, they're a contender. They are absolutely a contender.
I thought you were going to say the one thing the Bulls can't do is finger roll.
That's George Gervin. That's the Iceman.
Yes, sir. We might have to dedicate a whole show to the Iceman. You know, he was just that type of guy. He really was. But, you know, before we swing over to college hoops, we got a Lakers Thunder tonight. It could get ugly. They still don't have their big guys. It's looking, though, like Dwight Howard might come back for that Miami Heat game, which is when they announced the All-Star starters. They're a mess. The Lakers are a mess, and I'm gonna just keep saying it. I just don't think they need more time, yes, but by February 21st, the trade deadline, I don't know if Howard should be on that team.
I don't know. And who are you getting back in return for Howard, who hasn't signed a long-term contract? Who is gonna trade their franchise for Howard, who's notoriously flaky? So what is it that the Lakers are going to get back in return for Dwight Howard for half a season of a rental? I don't know. And, by the way, when Kobe goes, you know, off into the sunset in a year, two, three, who are you building this team around? Pau Gasol doesn't know if he's a big man or if he's a shooter. He's all kind of confused now between going
and
with Phil
Jackson.
He's
only got a couple years left, too.
To Mike Brown to now Mike D'Antoni. So who are you building this team around? Even if Dwight Howard can't play with Kobe, there's something to be said for a 25, 26-year-old Dwight Howard as the cornerstone of your franchise starting
right.
in 2 years.
And
right?
Jim Buss came out and finally spoke and said, hey, we're not making any changes. So I guess they're giving Howard the keys. That's fine, but maybe they're like the Miami Heat. Maybe this, the first year, the band comes together. They can't win it. But maybe next year with an off season and practice and training camp, maybe they can win it. Because they're not going to –
they're barely making
the playoffs with this team, 8 or 7 seed. And they'll probably get bumped in the first round unless they can really get it together. So
yeah, a lot of things have to happen in L.A. You know, maybe they need to go out there on Venice, you know, Venice Beach, get their egos right, go hoop it up a little bit, you know, maybe with Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes, you know what I mean? Because I don't know what it is. They need, first of all, their defensive rotations are horrible. The problem is that Mike D'Antoni isn't the coach to get them back on track defensively.
He definitely isn't. He definitely isn't.
Well,
maybe Steve Nash should grow his hair back out again, because that little cut, man, he looking like he's in the military and or in some weird militia group. It's not working for me. It's just not working. So let's take a quick break and let's get into some college hoops, baby. Ray and Tay.
We are back, and we're getting you ready believe me, it's worth it. It's worth it. You got to put in a little homework with the college basketball because these guys turn over every year, right? With the one and dones and some
one
of the
done,
2 years. So you definitely have to keep up on it. But believe me, when March Madness comes around,
nothing
it'll
more
all
exciting.
Be worth it. Nothing. You know, as much as we love the NFL, as much as we love baseball and basketball, NBA basketball, there is nothing like those 2 weeks in March when that tournament goes from what is now 68, but call it 64, down, you know, 32, 16, 8, 4. That's unbelievable. March Madness is nothing like it in all of sports.
Well, remember on Wednesday when we were talking about the Hall of Fame and we were talking to Hank and I was talking about, you know, Pollyanna and baseball and apple pie and America? Well, to me, forget baseball. And, you know, football is its own animal. But there's nothing more American and fantastic than these college athletes and the purity of the dance and March Madness. It's the best tournament. They get it right. It is just incredible. So, you know, we've got some, you know, games that we want to talk about coming up this weekend. And like Ray said earlier, we just got a great guest coming up Monday evening with Seth Davis, you know, great writer from Sports Illustrated and a great basketball analyst and reporter for CBS Sports. And he breaks it down. You know, he's a Duke alum. And we're going to have to talk to him. I mean, look, we're 15 games in. Duke's number one. But they got a nice matchup. Let's look at this first game. Duke versus NC State coming up early Saturday morning. Not
Absolutely.
As early as 11 a.m. when St. John's plays Georgetown. Well, that's a whole other conversation.
No, but they're playing
that's
at 12.
That's ridiculous.
So, you know, you probably got, what is that, 8:30 wake-up call, 8 o'clock wake-up call?
Oh, man, listen.
So
you
got to do your
back.
Thing. Well, keep in mind, last night, well, let's just go through this. Last night, Arizona lost. So they lost to Oregon with Chip Kelly in the audience, 70-66. So Arizona dropped from the ranks of the undefeated. Wyoming earlier. So we only have two undefeated teams, Duke at number one, and we're going to talk about Michigan at number two. So really only two undefeated teams so far. So at 12
o'clock. With big matchups this weekend, too, where they could both
exactly.
lose.
Exactly. So Duke, number one Duke, goes to NC State and plays at number 20 NC State. Now, Duke has lost again for the second year in a row, Ryan Kelly. So he was a key to their team last year as a junior, and now as a senior too. I mean, he's a, you know, a 6'10" shooter. He can rebound. He can score.
11 points
a
game.
Threes.
You know.
Yeah,
so.
He's definitely an important cog. But you know, they're just going to have to go with their big three. So Quinn Cook, you know, at the point. Mason Plumlee at the forward, and your boy
Seth
Curry,
Baker.
Another
I mean, Curry.
Curry.
Yeah,
doing his thing. So Curry and Plumlee are two Naismith Award finalists. But yeah,
and it's
they
time
have to,
for them,
have...
Ray. It's time for those two to step up and sort of put their stamp on the program. I think any Cameron crazy and Duke fanatic and fan, you know, would say that, and we'll have to get that experience and talk to Seth Davis about that as well. But to me, Duke and Coach K, this is going to be an interesting season for them. Obviously, they, you know, just got Jabari Parker, you know, number one recruit coming in for next year. But I don't know. NC State to me, C.J. Leslie, you know, who could be a first-round pick. He's scoring 15 a game, their leading scorer for NC State. I love Lorenzo Brown. You see, this team right here.
Well, Howell,
I think
too.
That,
you know, NC State.
Well, no, Howell's
nation.
I mean, he's a great scorer, but a versatile player. And he's got like.
They lead the nation
know.
In field goal percentage, NC State does. So they're very efficient on offense.
And he's getting pretty much a double-double, pretty much 13 points and 10 rebounds a game. So I like NC State. I think they're, you know, a good team. They're maybe a little bit deeper than Duke. It's going to be interesting. I'm probably going to take NC State in this one. I got to be honest with you. I just got a feeling the crowd's going to be hyped up. I think Leslie needs a coming out game, and I think Duke is going to miss Kelly enough that NC State, you know, led by Howell, Brown, and Leslie, can get over the hump. The only thing, I'll just say this real quick, and then you break it down. But the only thing I think that could save Duke is obviously their 3-point shooting. You know, can Cook repeat that 27-point performance the other night? Can Seth Curry, you know, break out? And, you know, he's scoring 16 a game, so he's having a good season. Can they get the threes bouncing? And then what player is going to replace Kelly to really, you know, sort of step up, you know?
Yeah, real quick, NC State was a preseason pick to win the ACC, so they're not sneaking up on anybody. Duke, you know, they live and die by the three. They defend
the
and
problem.
They shoot threes, and if those threes go down, then they're great. Everything's hunky dory. But if it doesn't, they're in a little bit of trouble. I actually, despite the fact that it's at NC State, I mean, basically those teams are so close to each other. But I like Duke in this game. I like Duke to win this game.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next game we'll go to the Big
on Saturday.
We'll go to the Big Ten. On Saturday, you got Minnesota at Indiana. So number 8 Minnesota against number 5 Indiana. Now, Minnesota's in the middle of a brutal stretch where they play Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan back to back to back. So those are three really tough games.
That conference play is exciting, but it can be grueling for some teams.
Sure.
But that's where you make your meat, right? That's where you improve. You know, you impress all the voters and all the guys on the committee where they're like, okay, this team was above 500 in a number one ranked conference, and this is what the Big Ten really is this year, you know? So it's going to be interesting. Let me ask you this. I know you were a little down in the beginning of the season. We'll talk about this game on Cody Zeller. But to me, Cody Zeller, you know, he's not blowing you away at 16 and, you know, points and 8 rebounds a game. But I will say this. He's just very talented. You know, he'll get you a block a game, you know, maybe a steal, an assist. I think that what I like about him is that he's efficient. He can pass. He moves well. He's pretty athletic. He cuts. I mean, for me, obviously, Indiana, you know, it's more than just one player. I mean, it's definitely a team, you know.
Well, that's why
we'll,
I think they'll win ultimately. And,
well,
and,
Will,
and,
Will, the kid, Will Shaney.
Sheehy.
Or Sheehy,
yeah. And I think ultimately that they might have the best talent, you know, top to bottom on their roster as anybody in the country, maybe better than anybody in the country.
Oh, yeah, Wafer.
So I was
tough.
A little hard on Zeller because they were calling him the preseason player of the year, and to me, preseason player of the year needs
to
come
to
out here
real
and dominate.
Dominant.
And he's a very talented young man, and he can play, and he can run, and he's athletic, and he's got good hands, and he's got
so
good
footwork.
You say
he was looking like Matt Geiger early on?
No, he's better than Matt. Now, Matt was our boy, though, at Georgia Tech.
I'm just joking.
But no, he's more talented than Matt Geiger. But I like that team. I like Zeller, Oladipo, Watford, you know, shooting those threes. Sheehy and Halls, you know, these guys can and they play complementary roles. They all play off each other. Each person knows his role. So I really like this Indiana team. I think, unfortunately for Minnesota, they're going into Bloomington, and Indiana's going to show them how it's done. But, yeah, I like this Indiana team in the long run because there's no dominant team. So if there's no dominant team, I look for a team that's got depth, that's got role players, that's got one or two go-to guys, and I like this kid Oladipo and Zeller, the inside-outside combination.
But you like Minnesota, too. Defensively, Toby's got them playing good defense. I don't think they have the stars that Indiana has or the offensive threats. I like Andre
Hollins. And Williams are nice, but
Williams
they're not. Yeah, they're not as talented as Indiana.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, and I would say, although, you know, never know with Joe Coleman. Maybe he sort of comes out a little bit and steps up, but I got to go with Indiana winning this one in the Big Ten. And now the other nice matchup on
Sunday.
On CBS.
I'm going to have to do picture-in-picture or go out
to
the bar.
Yeah, I know.
We'll
be watching the football games, right? But you got to kind of put it on pip it out, picture-in-picture. What are you thinking? Michigan against Ohio State?
I tell you what, Ohio State is struggling on defense. And the problem is that Michigan has 4 legitimate scorers. You know, Trey Burke is running the show at 18 points and 7 assists. And then you got Hardaway's kid and Robinson's kid, you know, doing their thing. Now, you know, we're getting old when we got Hardaway Jr. and Robinson the third on Michigan's team. And they also got the kid Stauskas, who's hitting those, you know, hitting those threes. Wow. You know, if this were a couple weeks ago, I would say Ohio State. But
don't sleep on Jordan Morgan, too. I like Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Ohio State's got some talent. Deshaun Thomas and Lenzel Smith Jr. Aaron Kraft is a tough guard. So I'll tell you what, Aaron
Kraft doesn't turn it over. That matchup right there could be the key. Hardaway Jr. and Kraft.
Well, they'll put him on Burke probably to stop Trey Burke and slow down that offense. Because really, as Trey Burke goes, you know, Michigan goes. So that's the matchup, Kraft against Burke. Ultimately, I think Michigan has too much talent and too much scoring, and the fact that Ohio State is struggling on defense really comes back to haunt them in this particular matchup. And even though the game is at Ohio State, I like Michigan. I like Michigan this game.
I like Michigan too, but you know what I really like about them? It's the speed. They play fast. They're sort of aggressive. I think, like you said, I like the balance, you know, whether it's Robinson, you know, Burke, Hardaway. These guys can score, and I just think that at the end of the day, this team, they have a chance to do something special. I'm not saying that they're my, you know, Final Four pick or whatever, but I just, there's something about this Michigan team where they look like they kind of have the eye of the tiger. You know,
if
we'll
they
see
get
how
to
that...
play up front, they need those big men to contribute. Like, they have this rotating set of big men, and that's their weakness, is inside. So rebounding, defense, and so they need a little
and
bit of...
And that could hurt
a...
them against Indiana, right? I mean, that could be... You just hope, though, in the tournament, they might not have to meet Indiana, right, until the chip or the Final Four, you know? And it's not like, you know, the NBA. I mean, these college teams are not so – college is not so deep with big men. Although I do like Alex Lem and Maryland, go Terps, and Nerlens Noel, who's, you know, trying to improve. So we'll see, you know, how it all plays out. But you know what? It's that time, Ray.
Oh, yeah.
The Final Four.
NFL style.
Oh, gosh. I honestly say – like you said, this might be, and you think about these great college basketball games, right? Some good NBA games. This might be one of the best weekends in sports because of all that you have. So let's start Saturday. CBS, 4:30. The Baltimore Ravens are going to the Denver Broncos. Why don't you break it down first, and I'll let you know what I think.
So the question is, so three out of these four games are rematches of games that were played this year. So the first thing you do, and history is not a predictor of the game to come up necessarily, but if you don't want to repeat history, and the Broncos, I mean the
Ravens don't want to,
then you got
to
do something.
And they're going back
different.
To Denver, just like the Texans are going back to New England.
You got to do something different. And the Broncos ran the ball 45 times, and they controlled the time of possession 37 to 23 time of possession. So in order for Baltimore to win, they've got to do something different. And they've got to – it sounds weird, but they've got to make Peyton Manning make plays and be uncomfortable, because if he can just hand it off and get that running game going and get that time of possession going – It's just going to be a repeat of the regular season game. So I think that's definitely on their mind. And in Baltimore's case, they need to convert third downs. I mean, everybody needs to convert third downs, right? But in terms of keeping the time of possession, Ray Rice and converting the third down, and then once in a while finding Torrey Smith or Pitta or Bolden down
who's
the
back,
field, right?
Who is back could be an issue. I don't think he's coming in this game 100% healthy, not like anybody really is.
Right.
You know, even though the Gronk's coming back, he's not 100% healthy either. But
so having said all of that, I think ultimately that Denver's running game is still too much for Baltimore. And I think that Denver can run the game, can run run the ball, and they have that stretch play action that Manning uses, and then he'll find Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker and Dreesen and Tammy and too many weapons and too much Peyton Manning.
And Stokely, if he needs.
By the way, doesn't play that well in the cold weather. So remember, when he was at Indianapolis, he had that nice cozy dome to play in.
Yeah.
And when
he'd
have to
go
on the road,
he wears the gloves. It helped him with
yeah,
his
he
arms.
Wasn't all that effective. But I think ultimately that Denver's running game is too much, and based on the running game, they'll be able to go play action, and they'll be able to keep the Baltimore defense on the field too long, and eventually they'll just break down and give up some big plays over the top to the receivers and even up the middle to the running game. So I like a repeat in terms of the outcome. I think Denver wins the game. I think they win 27-20.
27-20. Wow. You're right in my alley. I'm going to say this. T. Sizzle and the boys, they didn't all play together, him, Nada, Ed Reed, and Lewis last time. I think the Ravens are hungry. I think they've been down this road before. They used to be the bullies on the block. I remember them going to New England a couple years ago and just taking care of Brady. Terrell Suggs, he's 0-8. You know, he has not beaten Peyton Manning since he's been playing. I just think with Manning throwing for 4,659 yards and 37 touchdowns, he is just too much. McGahee can't come back to the AFC Championship, but Moreno has been running his just life off. Coming back and rejuvenating his whole career.
The New Jersey product, no Sean
yeah,
Moreno,
man.
By way of
and
Georgia.
For me, I do think Ray Rice and Pierce both combined need to have 30 to 35 rushes, however you break it up. Ray needs some screen passes. I think that's going to slow down Von Miller and Dumerville and the pass rush. Peyton Manning, you know, he's just too effective on third downs. But I think when it comes down to it, ball control, like you said, all those receivers, I think you could see Decker being really clutch in this game. And I've got the Broncos winning 26-20.
Okay, so we got a very similar thoughts on that game.
Yeah, one point
right.
off apiece. So
well,
now
let's
look
next
at this.
One. What do you got for me there? Green Bay at San Fran, 8 o'clock on Fox on Saturday night. Game of the weekend, maybe.
Well, this one right here, to me, is what it's all about. This is the NFL at its finest. This is another rematch. The Packers, this time, they're not at home. They're on the road going to San Francisco. Obviously, it's the great quarterback against a great defense. And I think he's got all his toys, Aaron Rodgers. And the Niners, they got the rookie. But they put him in there for a reason. And I just think they've got something going enough that Woodson will not nullify Kaepernick and, you know, Matthews to stop them from scoring. Now, last time it was 30-22. You know, I mean, Kaepernick, you know, he's not a slouch. He, in a limited amount of time, 1,800 yards and threw for 10 touchdowns. But what he can do, Ray, is scramble and he can run. And Frank Gore and his threat to run will make Frank Gore very, very dangerous. The Packers couldn't stop Adrian Peterson. And I'm not saying Frank Gore is AP, but you know what? They ran the ball more this year with Kendall Hunter. Frank Gore is not as beat up. He's a little bit fresher. He had less carries, only 258 carries. Usually he has well over 300 every year for 1,200 yards. And I think the Niners, Crabtree, and my man Vernon Davis, can I get a yo, Terps?
Well, if we get him out of witness protection, if we can find him.
Listen, he's going to show up. And this might be the game of the weekend.
Okay.
I'm not saying that these boys will be stopped, because Aaron Rodgers is not going to be stopped. But I think the Niners, can pull it off, even with Aaron Rodgers throwing for three touchdowns.
What?
I think the Niners win 26-24.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Okay. 26-24.
My Super Bowl champ stays alive.
Okay. All right. Well, this is definitely where we differ. So, again, I picked this first game of the season. I thought Green Bay would win and win big. So I ate my words then, and Green Bay had a tough start to the season. But I think they're getting healthier. And I think that the return of Charles Woodson helps them in the running game. And up the middle, they have to be tough with the run stoppers and, you know, Morgan Burnett and A.J. Hawk and B.J. Raji right up the middle and Charles Woodson now playing safety. They need to stop Frank Gore. Once you stop Frank Gore or contain him and keep him in the box, then you put pressure on essentially a rookie in Kaepernick. He's a second year technically out of Nevada, but he's really, in terms of his experience, he's a rookie.
Yeah.
And then you have a situation where the best player in the game, Aaron Rodgers, potentially just does his thing. So I believe that there's going to be a domino effect. So I think that the Green Bay D will contain the San Francisco defense. So I think San Francisco scores 20 in this game. I think the Green Bay D holds them to about 20. Now, on the other side of the football, I think it's a domino effect.
Justin Smith is playing.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going. So Justin Smith is playing, but he's not – I don't know. I'm no doctor, but I'm thinking he won't be 60 – at most he'll be 60, 70% effective. So what that means is they don't need to double-team him. They single-team him. And then they can double-team Aldon Smith, who basically, since he got his 19.5, 20th sack – he hasn't been the same. So last two games, he really hasn't done much. And so now Green Bay has the luxury of double-teaming him. And then down the road, they're able to keep people away from Aaron Rodgers. And if Aaron Rodgers has time in the pocket with all of those receivers that he has, where he throws to 8, 9, 10 different receivers, I think Aaron Rodgers just picks them apart. Add that to the fact that David Akers is shaky in a close playoff game where you need some field goals. I like the Niners. I like the Packers. I like the Packers to score. The Niners to score 20. I like the Packers to score 31. I think the Packers end up winning 31-20.
31-20?
Yeah.
Woo. All right. Well, let's go to Sunday. This matchup, the Seattle Seahawks, for the second week in a row, having to come to the East Coast. The last team to 2 weeks in a row come out to the East Coast and win was the L.A. Rams in 1979, who went on to go to the Super Bowl against my Pittsburgh Steelers with Vince Ferragamo, baby.
Wow.
Oh, man. So
didn't
this
they win?
Another
they
great
the
matchup.
NFC Championship. They played Tampa, right? They won something like 9-6 in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
And then
9-6 or 9-7. It was like a field goal battle. Yeah, that was great. That was a great, you know, that's with the cream Tampa Bay jerseys. But Russell Wilson, he's nobody's rookie, right? 3,100 yards, 26 touchdowns. He is a beast. And we got beast mode, Mr. Skittles, the lynch mob, who I think can run on anybody. The question to me is the Seattle offense. Can he get his tight ends, Miller and the other one, McCoy, Sidney Rice, and Tate, can he get them to the point where they can actually score on this Falcons secondary? You know, the Falcons secondary is the one part of this team that is really solid. Now, we know the big matchup is Seattle's defense without Clemens, but those corners, Browner and Sherman, going up against Roddy White and Jones. So for me, the question is, can Gonzalez, Douglas, and Jacquez Rodgers out of the backfield, can they score enough? And with Clemens being out, you know, you're going to have Irvin stepping in. Can he sort of fill the spot, him and Wagner, and sort of dominate? I don't know if Turner can run on Red Bryant and the Seattle defensive line. And I know they're on the road, and I know it's a lot. And Matt Ryan and the Falcons went 13-3, and they've been checking off the bucket list, as my boy NFL Network Jamie Dukes has been saying. And it's true. Matty Ice, this is important. He's got to do it, right? 32 touchdowns, 4,700 yards. Well, guess what? Russell, last name Wilson, is going to shock the world.
He'll scramble. Seattle. Okay.
He'll scramble on that turf. He'll get first downs. He'll move it. He'll do what needs to get done. And I think they win a close one, 24-23. The Seahawks pull it out.
Okay. So here again we disagree. I like the Atlanta Falcons. So I think everything you said is right, except the fact that the Falcons will be able to dominate the middle of the field. Even if Browner and Sherman are able to negate Roddy White and Julio Jones, which I don't think they will. I think they'll get good but not great numbers.
We'll see how the refs call it in the first quarter. We'll see how physical they let them be.
It'll be very physical on the outside. And look, they might call it both ways, right? They might have an offensive pass interference there on Roddy White and especially Julio Jones. But I think, again, like the San Francisco, like the Justin Smith effect, who he's actually playing, but he's playing hurt, I think Clements being out is bad. Because Clements being out means that Bruce Irvin, who's definitely a specialist pass rusher now, is going to be asked to do more than just play off of Clements and his 11.5 sacks. So I think Irvin will be exposed a little bit as just a pass rusher, essentially. And I think that Bobby Wagner and Cam Chancellor will have their hands full up the middle of the field with Tony Gonzalez, Jacquizz Rodgers, and Michael, who still has a little of the burner in him. So I think Atlanta wins this game 27-23. And again, because up the middle, Matty Ice is going to find some holes. Gonzalez is going to get a couple of touchdowns. And I think they're just too much. I think that
I could see that one happening.
Too much.
Yeah. I could definitely see it happening, and Clemens was a factor for me, too. I just think that there's something magical about Russell Williams, Russell Wilson, and Pete Carroll and that team. So we got two games different. Now, number four, as the clock runs down on our show, 42-14, last time they played in New England this year. Bengals, they stopped the Bengals defense by, Arian Foster, boom, 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 pounding it. They kept the Bengals off the field. Gronk is back, the Patriots, they spread you out, Ridley can run it, Vereen. To me, I think it all comes down to Schaub. I think Brooks Reed wasn't in the game, so he's going to make a difference. I think Andre Johnson and Schaub have found a new rhythm. Owen Daniels is healthy again. He's going to be big. I think the Texans play the game of their lives and still lose. I think it won't be 42-14, but I do think it'll be 30-24. I think the Patriots win, and I think Brady and Manning will be the matchup. So I got the Pats, 30-24.
Okay. All right. Well, real quick, to avoid a 42-14 outcome, the Houston Texans, A, need to show up and bring their big boy pants and not go down 21-0, because if you go down to the New England Patriots, you lose. So I think it's incumbent on them to score and possess the ball. Now, the good thing is they can do that because they have what was a couple years ago the best trio in the game in Schaub, Johnson, and Arian the Manimal Foster. So
he's the difference maker.
I actually like Arian Foster, who's rushed for 100 yards in each of his three prior playoff games, to go for 150 and score a couple of touchdowns. So ultimately, the way to beat the Patriots is to score on them early and to make Brady uncomfortable. So to me, the three most important players are Arian Foster for ball control and take a possession or two away from Brady, and then Antonio Smith and J.J. Watt need to come up and just bother Brady all day. They have to come up the middle, from the outside, all day, and bother your boy Tom Brady. So I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. I have to stick with my pick. I'm calling for the upset. Houston Texans, to all our listeners down there in the great state of Texas. How about those Houston Texans, Oilers?
My father-in-law would love you for that, but even he doesn't believe it. And I picked the Texans and Niners in my Super Bowl, and I don't believe it.
Write the score down, 31-30, Arian Foster for president, 150 yards, J.J. Watt, 2.5 sacks.
Ray staying loyal to his picks, and Tay just trying to keep it honest. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was a great show. Watch
Thanks
the college basketball. Watch the NBA, Lakers, Thunder, Knicks, Bulls tonight, and watch the
Seth
NFL.
Seth Davis on Monday.
Oh, yeah. We will see you. We'll be back Monday, 6 o'clock. Seth Davis is coming on with us. It's going to be a great show, so make sure you tune in. And, you know, email some questions at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And thanks for talking
great
sports
weekend.
With friends. Yeah, have a great weekend. We are out.
Day in, day out. Day in, day out. How can we really see when our eyes are blinded to what we really need? They control our minds. How can we really see when our eyes are blinded to what we really need? They control our minds.